Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. We're spending this episode focusing on what's worth living for. We expect that it's different for each of us and compelling enough to dominate our own thoughts and conversations. We have resources to help with those conversations within groups or other trusted relationships at fabricmpls.com. In this episode, we get to sit with Greg at his backyard fire pit. So imagine yourself right there, sitting across the fire from Greg.
Hey, welcome to my fire. I'm Greg Meyer, and glad to have you here with me this evening. So this is the third week since we've been able to gather as a community, which has made everything a little bit awkward and strange, and we're trying to figure out exactly what we should be thinking about, talking about, and gathering around, and how we should do it. And, well, for tonight, this is my best bet. So welcome to my fire. In the last 2 weeks, we spent a lot of time talking about how we understand ourselves and what's going on within us so we can care for ourselves, as well as how we understand the people around us and what they're going through so we can care for them better. This week, I want to take a little different tack on all that. I want to look at this larger experience we're going through and try to understand it in a way that maybe helps us deal with it a little bit better, that helps us see our path through it and understand what it means to be where we are. 2 weeks ago, I said that this is a wilderness time, and everything I've experienced in the 2 weeks since then has said, yeah, it's a wilderness time, all right. We understand wilderness. You may never have been in wilderness, but I bet you get it. And the reason is, I think wilderness is just embedded in our psyche. Evolution has implanted it in us so deeply that we just know what's going on with it. In fact, I would say wilderness isn't so much a place. Wilderness is an experience. And what is happening right now to our entire globe has put us all on a wilderness journey. When it comes to wilderness, I would say there's one quintessential story for those of us who come from this Judeo-Christian tradition, and that is the story of Israel going through the wilderness for 40 years. That's told in the books of Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers in the Old Testament. And 40 years, I mean, that means a lifetime, as long as one can imagine. I mean, this is where you are. And the neat thing about that story, well, there's a lot of neat things, but one of them is that the story isn't there to tell us how you survive the wilderness. The story is there to tell us how we discover who we are and how we discover our relationships with the world and with that third strand through that time in the wilderness. And I want to be clear that, you know, I don't think, like, God has subjected us to this. I don't think things even work that way at all in order to teach us a lesson. That's just a strange way of understanding the world and understanding how this third strand, this God, our God, works with all that sort of stuff. But I do know that when we are tried, when we have these tough experiences, they can either make or break us. I mean, they either distract us, like I said, from the stuff that's really worth living for, or they bring it into greater relief. They sharpen the contrast so that we start seeing what's really important, what's worth living for, what we really care about in a way that helps us make better decisions and better choices and to live for and around and about those sorts of things. So welcome to my fire. In the wilderness, and I imagine this is true for Israel, as they set off, I mean, it started out so triumphant. They're escaping their bondage in Egypt, right? And so this is a future. They're headed in the right direction. They're doing what they needed to do, and this can get us through. But as the sun sets, all that bravado tends to just kind of melt away, and the darkness of the night brings worries and anxieties and memories of what we left behind and fear of what we might be heading off to. And all that uncertainty gets really scary at night. And so what do? They build a fire, give a sense of light and warmth and companionship, 6 feet away from other people, of course, but companionship. And that gets us through that night. So welcome to my fire. We aren't in the dark of night yet with COVID-19. Certainly not here in Minnesota anyway. They tell us that we're weeks, maybe even months away from the peak of where the infections are going to take their greatest toll on those of us that are sick and those who might die. It's going to take a greater toll on our businesses and our livelihoods. We're not at night yet. We're barely approaching sunset. But yet, it's good to know that when we do have these dark moments, there's a place to go. So what is it about this experience? What is this about going through the wilderness and knowing that, we left bondage, we left this place where we might do nothing about fighting or finding a better life in the midst of a pandemic, and it would take this awful toll, to doing what we need to do to get on the other side as unscathed as possible? That's our promised land, right? That's what happened, what's waiting for us on the other side of the wilderness. But in the meantime, we maybe left that bondage, but we're not free yet. No, we're in wilderness. We're in that transition time. We're in the place where we're doing what we got to do, but it hasn't delivered what it's supposed to give us yet. And that's scary, and it gets tiring, and it's hard. And it's hard to be here. It's hard to be here. So what I want to think about is what happens during this season of life in which we maybe left something behind that wasn't where we belonged, but we aren't where we're headed yet. And this isn't just something we can wait out and say, well, I'm going to hunker down for a little bit and everything will be fine. No, it's bigger than that and longer than that. And it's something that we need to be doing together. So what is this wilderness all about? Bring you some thinkers, bring you some ideas, invite you to bring your own as well as we gather under fire and look for that hope and cling to one another as we pass through. So welcome to my fire.
Sit down, stop your feet from moving. Sit down, stop your mouth from speaking. Sit down, stop your hands from doing. Sit down, stop your mind from racing. For
thank you, Greg, for inviting me into the fire. I like to sit across from you.
Yeah, it's good to have you here, Tim. When you're going through the wilderness, it's the people you have with you are maybe more important than anything else. You don't get to take a lot of stuff into the wilderness with you, so people are pretty important.
Okay, so you knew this was going to be homegrown because that's how we have to do everything right now. But my producer was sleeping on the job, and I forgot to introduce Brother Tim. This is Tim Francik, poet, singer, longtime friend, mentor, co-conspirator, friend of the Fabric community, and he has experiences that I knew would be valuable to us today. So here's Tim Francik.
Yeah, and it's funny, just as you're speaking now, I'm reminded of a story that I heard this year, and I think it comes from India. It's an old, old story, and I'll just give you the moral of the story, if there is such a thing. But it's about a person that kind of, in order to get out of being a slave, made a deal to that they would live on this really cold mountain. They would stay overnight on a mountain that the authorities thought they would die for sure. But it had some sort of a friend that made an agreement that from the next mountain over, they would light a fire. And that if they could keep their eye on that fire, even though it was a mile away, they would know someone was there and they could feel some sort of life and warmth from the distance and through that act, because the one kept the fire going all night long through the darkness and through the cold, the young man was able to live. I think it means a lot to even see each other and to know, to share that we're going through this, and especially the beauties, the songs and the delicacies. I remember one, I'm kind of getting the cart before the horse here to some extent, but as I was talking with you, Greg, earlier about this time, I was reminded personally about when my wife, Carrie, was diagnosed with breast cancer, a rough form of breast cancer, a real uncertain future with the cell that she had, and some serious surgeries along the way. And that reminds me of this time because of the uncertainty and the seriousness of the time too. And we read about it every day and we try to go to sleep at night. And in the morning we wake up and we feel better when the sun's rising always. And everything for me is more peaceful. And then at night, then the alarms start going off again. You know, this is the cycle. Yeah. But it's that uncertainty and that insistence. I think it's important to be real honest and hopeful at the same time through times like these. That's what I learned. Carrie and I would say to each other, and it sounds like a cliche, but we would say it is what it is. And then we'd look at each other and say, like, that's like a cliche, but we're going to still say it because I don't know how to say it any differently. And that was really about accepting the situation.
You know, when we're in the wilderness, it seems like it'd be so much easier if we just knew how long we were going to be here. But that's sort of, there's a couple of things that define wilderness, and one of them is that you don't know how long you're going to be there. If you did, that's right. Be wilderness. You know, that's just a tough moment or something.
Yeah.
And so you want to ask all these questions. You know, how much further? How much longer? How long do we have to do this? And we want to know those things outset. Yeah. From the outset.
It's that desire for control that we have, especially when the stakes are high. Some of us, parts of myself that really want that control and rush out and want to control it. They want to talk about a calendar. They want to pull it out. They want some answers. And we've seen a lot of that playing out in culture, I think. People that really want to have some answers here. And the only thing, if we could put a tiny little microphone up to the virus, maybe we could get some answers.
So. Well, you know, there's a lot to know. And that's what's
let me hold for
right?
Sorry, let me just, they're getting loud out there with the juicer. I'm going to ask him to hold off for a second.
Sounds good.
Take care. That's too loud.
It's pretty great when your Zoom session gets interrupted by a juicer being too loud. I kind of like that.
That's
kind of
good. That's not bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I was saying is that there is a lot of information out there. There's a lot of things for us to know. And that's kind of what we're deluged with, right? I mean, you know, how do we
that's right.
distance and masks yes. or no masks? And is a homemade one good? And, you know, when is the peak going to happen? And I mean, it's all incredibly important information. We're not, you know, say stick your head in the sand and don't worry about that. It's really incredibly important information. You know, data gathering as you travel through the wilderness is not a dumb thing to do. But it doesn't change the fact that you're still in the wilderness. And the biggest questions there are not around those details, but they're, you know, inside of you and the things that you need to face inside of you. You know, and I like that question that you and Carrie were dealing with that you thought was a trite question, but nonetheless seemed to be the question to ask. And that is like, well, it is what it is, which sort of says we can't control this. So who are we going to choose to be nonetheless?
Yeah. There's one poem that comes to mind, and I don't know who wrote this. It's just a tiny little thought, but it's a poem that I've heard from some of my friends, and it might be David White that wrote this. It goes, this is not the age of information. This is not the age of information. This is the age of loaves and fishes, because one good word is food for 1,000. So you can decide what that word is, but one good word is food for 1,000. So I like the division there, talking about there's one good word that isn't in the realm of information, and what is it? You know, something yeah. that's food that we're all looking for. When Carrie was sick, we opened up the possibility that people could make food for us if they'd be willing. And some people, so many people were so good and brought things and bought things. And it was special just to receive that and ask them just to leave it in this one refrigerator in our garage, because we were, who knows what we were in the midst of. And people were right. very good about that and kind. But we, when we would get that, there were some, all of it was good. And there were some that obviously people had spent a lot of time home cooking and wrapping with ribbons and things like this and time when we were not able to experience the delicacies of life because we were in survival mode. To receive that kind of beauty was so moving. Mm-hmm. And I think of what we can do for each other, because we can't really be connecting so much like that. But we can do things that take a little time and thought. And I guess it's about putting love into something, and it actually transmits in certain ways. People are writing letters sometimes, and handwritten snail mails and things like that are more important than we know.
Oh, I mean, I think we're all finding it out right now. And if I want to encourage anything to the people who are listening to this or watching this, is that, you know, who can you reach out to? And don't worry that you know exactly what the situation is or what they need, but just reach out in a tangible way as you can, assuming you can't visit them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the card, the mm-hmm. phone call, the text, I mean, whatever, but reach out and just mm-hmm. see how you can be available and how we can touch each other's lives. I mean, I want to go back to your poem there for a minute. You said that one word can feed 1,000.
Yeah.
There's one word in your song that you entered on that after I listened a couple times, all of a sudden I realized, oh, I don't know who this is referring to, but there's an I. And that I was asking us to listen.
You.
And I said, well, who is speaking here? Who is this? And I'll go ahead and I think it's the wilderness is calling us.
Mm.
And
that's good.
The wilderness is saying, hey, don't just try to get through me. I mean, there's no going back and there's no easy way out. You're here and I need you to listen. And a lot of people, yeah. I rejected that idea because I didn't want the coronavirus to be telling me what I should do, or I'm supposed to be listening to coronavirus. And I realized, well, the wilderness isn't the coronavirus. The coronavirus, yeah. the COVID-19 is what we had to flee. And now we're in the wilderness because we couldn't live there. And this place in between, you know, we're not out of it yet. So we don't have everything pulled together. This is a hard place and it's asking us to listen to it. We need to do this. We need to escape what would have happened had we done nothing. And we needed to figure out, what is this teaching us about ourselves and about our world? It seems like we might be learning a lot.
I like that a lot. The idea that the wilderness is the I in that song, asking us to just sit down and open up and be who we are in this situation,
which is something
that's bigger than us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that we can't control.
It's a piece that we can do at night. And when you get to that scary place in the wilderness, and we're all, some of you have had those already. Some of you have had these, you know, panicky things and not be able to get what you need, or your salary's being eliminated, your jobs. We've had a number of people in the community already have COVID-19. I know at least I have a friend, you know, whose brother-in-law died of it already. So when we are in those really dark night places, to change that question rather than hovering around all the scary stuff when we have those dark moments, which we're all inevitably going to have, but is what do I hear in this place? The quiet, the darkness is a silencing of the world that has always just been going on all the time. And it's an opportunity, which maybe sounds a little putting an awfully positive spin on it, but it means that there's enough quiet here to hear something perhaps you haven't heard before. One of the things that Melissa, with her fabric staff, pointed out to me, which I think is really true, is that, you know, really, is it in the end any different? I mean, aren't we all always in a wilderness time? It's just that the situation right now makes it obvious that we are. That I mean, the difference is that it's so obvious in a physically visible, demonstrative way that we now are aware of what is always true in our lives. And so when we are able to surround ourselves with ease and convenience, we have the illusion that my life is just all about these wonderful destinations and everything's going great and so on. But those are really just the trappings of our lives. And the real thing inside ourself in those times, while we think everything is just going great, I'm not in the wilderness, I'm in my promised land, you're really fooling yourself. I mean, that's actually when you may be getting further and further from what you're really supposed to be about. And now the fact that societally, in fact, even globally, I mean, this is a really unique time where we're all kind of just kicked back on our heels and we're all saying, whoa, what's going on? What really matters? You know, the thing we're talking about right now, like, you know, what's worth living for? And that seems to be the really palpable questions and we're asking and we're so out of our norm that we're forced to actually ask these questions. And I mean, horrible costs being paid in a lot of places. I mean, it's nothing about saying, well, this is, you know, certainly justified. That's not what it's about, but it's just saying there's a real gift here for us to understand what's worth living for.
Yeah, it's always right here, but it takes us this kind of a thing to push us out of our comfort zone to notice that.
I remember you were telling me when you were going through the cancer with Carrie that you were over at the First Covenant with Dan Collison and wanting to do a service and focus on healing. And in the process of doing that, you kind of realize that healing is sort of a tricky thing. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Dan, can we focus this gathering? I'm going to use my language. Can we focus this on getting out of the wilderness? And what did you kind of pick up from trying to do that?
But I like this wilderness reference because I imagine that whole crew of Israelites out there, they were constantly probably praying, like, just freaking pick us up and get us out of here, you know. But it was 40 years, you know, it was a whole lifetime, like you said. I mean, I think it came clear that healing can happen and magical things can happen and we can pray for those things, but it's tricky to because it can also pull us away from the moment and what is and the sweetness actually of this very moment if we're always focused on some. In fact, the word hope kind of takes us out of the moment, doesn't it? Even though it's a very positive word, it's not about right now. And so the idea that I kind of we talked about and formed it for myself about healing is about wholeness. It's about presence. It's about really feeling this very moment and life and togetherness, if that's part of the formula, at least to be fully present and to be able to see things, you know, the Jesus quotes where he says the kingdom is at hand. And I think there are those times, those fleeting times often that we feel that like, whoa, that was so beautiful. I'm going to hold that forever in my heart.
I think healing is, you know, what we seek on the other side of the wilderness. And I think that's reasonable. The healed person is not the same person as the one that needed the healing. There's something that is different about us, unpredicted, maybe not even asked for. And that's what wilderness does to us. It's a transformation. We can't guarantee, we can't control what comes out on the other side. We can't even control that we will come out on the other side. But healing then is something to hold carefully as we go into the wilderness. deeper and deeper, we start understanding what healing might look like. And I think the further we go into the wilderness and the more we let go of, you know, what we're trying to hang on to, how we're trying to fight against being there, trying to make it temporary, trying to make it something we can just kind of, hang on through, the more superficial we go with our healing. Like, I just want to get fixed. I just want to be healed. I just want my cancer to go away. I just want whatever. And I won't deny that. I mean, those are good wishes. I wish that for anybody. And sometimes it happens, but the healing, the further we go, the deeper you start seeing that. And I think as, you know, hearing your story about that, that service was making me feel that you started discovering the deeper meanings of what the healing looked like. And what would that, in fact, I had this experience. I had a woman that was a bit younger than me. This was a long time ago, but she had about a 10-year fight with cancer and she gradually lost. And I met with her, last couple of years, I probably met with her every month and we would talk about things. And I remember the last time we were really able to meet, my question to her was, what would healing mean if it didn't mean getting better? And that was that was her final question. That's the one she needed. And she also knew she didn't have to have the answer for it. There wasn't an answer for it. It was just the question in itself. Holding that question was what she needed.
That's true.
Maybe as a long way of getting into this idea that one of the problems with this naive idea of healing, like, you know, God, can't you just make the virus go away and we all get better and the economy is okay? If that was possible, if that was something God would do for us, could do with us, and, you know, that was God's role and how we are connected to this, that which is beyond us, you know, we call it God or we'll call it what you want, but wouldn't that make God guilty of bringing this on us in the first place? It made God guilty of how come God hasn't taken away? Like, why was it my prayer that suddenly, you know, got us out of it? And, you know, I just think that takes us down a rabbit hole that is impossible and it just doesn't work. And it doesn't reflect what that which is beyond us is about in the first place. I mean, if God doesn't send us into the wilderness. God is with us in the wilderness. You know, God says you needed to leave Egypt. You can't be slaves. You got to do something about this virus. This is horrible. It's going to exact an enormous cost on you. You've got to go someplace you don't know how to go. You aren't in control. You've got to flee to that place and I'll be with you. You know, this isn't on your own and you're going to find me there. And, we're going to do this together. I mean, I think that's what it's about. And so if God brings healing in that time, it's what you were just talking about, Tim. It's about even right now, I can somehow discover some wholeness and, giving up the control, letting go of everything. And, wilderness isn't a place to get all figured out. It's a place just to be, to listen.
Yeah. Well said. I like it.
Yeah.
Brother Tim and I talked about a lot of stuff, but one of the poems that arose out of our conversation felt really important to helping us pull together some of these ideas.
One of my favorite poets ever, and so for so many, Mary Oliver, lived on the East Coast in Massachusetts, right out at the end of that little point in Massachusetts she lived for years and years and years. And she went into nature every single day for hours sometimes, just to sit. She wrote this poem, The Buddha's Last Instruction. I want to bring it to you. Make of yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness to send up the first signal, a white fan, streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two sala trees. And he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward, it thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly I'm not needed, and yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Clearly I'm not needed, and yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd.
Thanks for listening to this message today. I have two thoughts I want to leave you with as we depart. First of all, Governor Tim Walz, our Minnesota governor, ended his address to us Friday with these words that I think are worth repeating. He said, "And above all else, this is where character starts to get defined. The ability to say, I will sacrifice in the short run to make sure my neighbors and my family stay safe. I will follow the rules to make sure we can get there, and I will continue to keep myself informed so that I can stop the spread of misinformation and that new ideas that may be getting missed are able to be shared in a coherent manner. As one Minnesota, and I would add as one nation, as one world, we'll get through this." These are important words for us to remember and to hold on to these days. So last thing I want to leave you with in Fabric, all you people who are out there refusing to answer unhelpful questions and always insisting on the better questions, I want to leave you with this little piece from Brother Timothy.
We do this singing every Saturday morning at Kieran's Kitchen. Sometimes people make up verses for songs, and that's really nice. And we are singing Jacob's Ladder. We climbing Jacob's Ladder. And one of the people just said, "Okay, I got a verse." Not all questions have an answer. Not all questions have an answer. Yeah, so that was felt so good to sing that song that day. It feels good to sing it right now. Thanks for the work you do, Greg, and thank you, Fabric Community. Such a good place to be and to be a part of.
Thanks for listening. Keep this conversation going with the people in your life. Share this podcast and resources. If you're looking to support this work financially, go to fabricmpls.com/give. A 5-star rating and review will also help others find us. Thanks again.